the biggest error I see in any discipline is people taking on too much, too fast. Depth over breadth, man. I believe in diving in deeply into a small pool of information. For instance, when you learn a new move in jiu-jitsu, learn something on one side of the body, learn it deeply, then learn it on the other side when you've developed that deep feel. As we open today's show with a quote from Josh Whiteskin, who, if you're unfamiliar with that name, you may be more familiar with the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer, the story of a child prodigy who excels in chess and is the first child to draw the world-famous chess master, Garry Kasparov. For those of you who do know the story of Josh Whiteskin, you know that by his late teens, Josh left the field of competitive chess to pursue his passion of martial arts and jiu-jitsu. Our guest today is no master of chess, but like Josh Whiteskin, Ross Cooper, a seasoned athletic trainer at the world-famous Detroit Country Day School, has split his time and role to become an athletic director. Ross, welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast.
Thank you very much.
And as always, we welcome Jeremy.
Of course, it is good to be back here. I'm excited. I know John and I, everything's kind of overlapping, and we've had some other issues going on, and we just, you know what, we say we're not making excuses. We're just going to get it done. We're going to grab this thing and go for it. And so I'm excited to learn about this. And also, one of the cool things, Ross, is that I've had some feedback on Facebook saying, hey, can you ask these questions during your interview? And so I look forward to getting those from Israel. And then there was a couple other people on there asking similar questions. So I look forward to sharing that knowledge and just gaining understanding from you. So thanks, Ross.
Thank you.
Yeah, as we go through these podcasts, I wanted to get a nice collection of athletic trainers and, topics to cover that we were not just always talking about one thing. And I know one of the things that athletic trainers sometimes aspire to be are administrative professionals in athletics. And I'm lucky enough to have a friend of mine right down the road who has been, not only a colleague, but a friend, but, mentor at times. And Ross, how long ago have you been, did you turn your role into, that part-time athletic trainer and AD?
It just started my sixth year as an athletic administrator. And to kind of talk about how that happened, it wasn't really intentional. I've just started my 14th year as head athletic trainer here. And had developed relationships, been on the user end of athletics. I think anybody who's probably dialing in or listening is, as an athletic trainer, a lot of times you're kind of on the user end in terms of being a support staff member that is involved with every aspect of athletics. And I think, I think all of us can sit there and say we've had our opinions about how things are run or good or bad, and so 5 years ago, our associate athletic director in the high school moved on. He was our head basketball coach. He resigned. Between probably two or three of us in-house, we were candidates to potentially take that position on. If anybody's ever talked to me, I'm an athletic trainer first. I would have never, ever even stepped up into that role to say that I wasn't going to be an athletic trainer and move into athletic administration. There was a middle school athletic director that had been here for a decade, and him and I both were commiserating one day. I hear we're both up for this job. Do you want it? No. Do you want it? And so he said, well, what would happen if we split it? And eventually that's what happened. And he's not sitting here, but him and I share an office here. We're associate athletic directors. We split it down the middle. He's still middle school. I'm still head athletic trainer. It's something to where you think your career path is going to go, and you think about the administrative level and how it ends up actually happening is kind of odd for me in my story. So
why don't you go ahead and touch on, how you got to Country Day and, eventually how you got to this dual role.
Sure. So, give a little background. I grew up in a town of about 1,800 people in Southeast South Dakota, Beersford High School. early in, actually, you know, I was a three sport athlete. I ran track, cross country, played basketball. At the time of when I was starting to figure out college, what the next plan was, I had the opportunity to be either kind of a quasi walk on D3 cross country runner or move into the next step as college student. It's funny, you know, we have so many mentorship programs now in high school athletics and travel abroad and, you know, I had a 1 day shadow with an athletic trainer at Augustana College, Norm Stone, who's still kind of around the area in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And basically it was like, it snapped. And as a junior in high school, I kind of knew exactly what realm I wanted to be in. Ended up going to South Dakota State University for my undergraduate, found myself in Michigan, going to Western Michigan for 2 years as a grad assistantship at Gull Lake High School. And then after that, I realized that, you know, us as athletic trainers, when we're thinking about what we want to be, whether it's the big show, whether it's the NFL, whether it's D1 athletics, things like that, I was really blessed at the time to be able to say, I know where I want to be. I want to be in the high school level. I think I can affect a lot more things than just physical as a high school athletic trainer. And I was able to identify really where, you know, where my calling was. And so, you know, after grad school, I bounced around at a couple different high schools / outreach, high school outreach contract jobs. At the time I got out of a high school gig, and for 2.5 years I was in a full-time clinical role in a physician-owned clinic, and opportunity came up in this area to find this job as head athletic trainer here, and I jumped at it and had never looked back in terms of where I want to be, where I should be. And now it's I guess the only thing, we talked a little bit about how it actually happened of, no, I don't want this job. No, I don't want this job. Let's split it. But I think that throughout the time here, I've developed enough relationships where it's helps me do both aspects of my job fairly well. I'll just say that. So, so it's been an interesting journey to be sure. So.
So what kind of duties do you have to perform as a athletic director? And do you ever see any overlapping between being an athletic trainer and an administrator?
Yeah. So the duties that I, on the administrative end, scheduling games, scheduling workers, scheduling refs, scheduling field time, all of the kind of the operational type things. And then the operational part of athletic administration, parent meetings, good or bad, and basically trying to mentor or manage our coaches, and the function of me splitting it with another associate athletic director, we actually just kind of split down the middle sport wise. So I know that I've got my soccer coaches that I need to manage, my basketball, hockey, lacrosse coaches, both men's and women's. And so that's kind of how we delineate the administrative side. But then there's plenty of overlap in that, you know, we still have rehabs and injury evals at lunch. I'm still in there virtually every day, except today. we're doing the podcast, but
and if anybody's watching right now, you see that Ross is in his big corner suite. He's left the smaller athletic training room office,
but I have a less comfortable chair, John, than I did in the athletic training room, because I think I earned a more comfortable chair in that one. I'm still involved, on a daily basis, I'm still involved with the middle of the day crowd, the after school crowd. And then really I can, when I'm, and I'm blessed to have two outstanding assistant athletic trainers that work with me. But there's times when, you know, when either one of them are down or we've got where I can kill two birds with one stone, where I'm able to say, okay, well, you guys could cover this, because I can kind of be something that's administratively not, you know, not a huge crowd, different things like that. I can do all of that and wear two hats. And it's good to kind of be that utility player within athletics. Cause as an AD, I'm running clocks. Sometimes I'm, running substitution tables at soccer games when somebody doesn't show up or traffic, things like that. So it is good to have kind of be a utility player within the department.
So there's a lot of different roles, like you said, that kind of overlap. Were you picking up some of those roles in your earlier years? And as, I don't want to say just, but in your specific role as an athletic trainer that kind of prepared you for that?
I think I'll go back to something that I said, and there aren't specific things because, John, I think I told you off record a long time ago is that, you know, I've been an athletic trainer now for 20 years. And really, as you know, there's things come up, but, you know, before I took on this administrative role, I was settled in terms of there are a lot of things that I know what how things are going to go and how to handle the components of my job. And I had been at the same place for probably 9 years. So it was odd for me to step into something that I really don't know anything about, meaning, you know, how to manage a lot of the operational things, how to take a parent meeting, how to manage a parent meeting or a parent coach meeting, things like that. So to answer your question in a long form, no, not really. There wasn't really anything to prepare me for the administrative side, except that the relationships that I have that you maintain to effectively do your job in any walk of life is key to success. So, I'm not pigheaded to think that I'm just going to know something. I'm a big question asker and things like that. So it's been a learn on the job for the last 5 years. And it's interesting to see once I've graduated a few kids that have come through when they were freshmen, and, you know, it kind of tells me I've been able to kind of do the job, but, you know, I had to live in it and there was no training manual. There were things like that. So, you know, I would just say the knowing what I knew about when I felt as an opinion that something was running effectively, being on the user end of athletics, and the relationship component that, you know, I know how things affect other people. I think that's really the only thing that has prepared me for that administrative side of my job. So,
yeah, you know, we had talked about this with Kurt a couple of weeks back, and the word that kept coming up was relationships, mm-hmm. relationships. And I even said it then that we're in a really good position as athletic trainers to affect a lot of people and, really create relationships that have helped us do what we do. And, sure. You know, I would assume that in that position where you're doing more administrative things, those relationships have really cemented your ability to do certain, organizational things or administrative feats that you need to take care of. Do you ever, are there days where you're covering multiple sports where you're both the athletic trainer and athletic director, or are there times where you're able to just take off a hat and say, I am only whatever, and not the other role, or are you always constantly wearing two hats?
I think in theory that I try to, so I have two other ADs. I have our executive AD, who's our head football coach, and my associate is now this year, he's our girls golf coach. And so they're both fall sports that they coach in. And I think that, you know, I have tried this year in particular to be able to make sure I delineate just like they can when they go to the course or they're out in the football field that they're not taking any meetings or they're not, I mean, you're always going to be accessible based on, you know, who we are on as athletic trainers, because you're always there. You know what I mean? You're always there. And, you know, you're just always accessible anyway as an athletic trainer, which to me in administrative role almost kind of not doubles it, but at least increases it by a third of how many people contact you as in being available, which is good and bad in different, you know, it could be a longer discussion. But I have tried, I have been able to, when I come into the training room after school, if I just say, I shut my athletic office door, that's it. You know, people know who I am, and a parent will walk in and request a meeting about an administrative issue with the tennis team or different things like that. And I think it's living in the position a little bit longer where I'm able to say, with all due respect, see this person, let's set a meeting so that I can give my full attention to what I truly love to do in being an athletic trainer. And then we'll address that on a different issue. It's almost like how we've given coaches our 24-hour rule to try to not be in polarized situations, because if I take a minute to address your concern, I'm taken away from the standard of care that I say I'm going to be as an athletic trainer. And I think it was this was a huge shift. And we probably discussed it a little bit in terms of your relationship with parents as an athletic trainer and an administrator. And that was a huge culture shock for me, in that as an athletic trainer, I was always kind of, it's not always, I mean, there are situations of it's a fairly non-polarized position with a parent, right? Because oftentimes you're acting as an advocate of either them or their physician, their student athlete. You're in a position of assistance and help if they recognize it. Sometimes they don't, right? Those are the polarized things. I think he's ready to play, or she's ready to play, and you're holding them out. But so it doesn't exist. I think that was a big adjustment for me, is that, you know, I wasn't a friend to all in terms of what my job is to try to keep your kids safe. Now it's to the point where, okay, well, this is where my student athlete might be having dealt a disservice or something to that effect. I think so that was an adjustment in terms of many of the tones of the parent interactions. But, you know, to go back to the original question is that I've really tried to, as a means of kind of, you know, attacking role strain, to try to separate my time out from the major things administratively versus my athletic training role. So,
so, you know, what kind of challenges have you, aside from the almost the political, you know, the polarizing things, what kind of challenges that you've experienced, both good and bad, with this transition?
I think the challenge, I'll start with the good, because I try to start with the good most times, but I think the challenge is what I reference is kind of the last 5 years, it's a totally different scope for me. And I think that in essence is a piece of humility, where it's kind of nice to get into a position where long-term, like, that you don't know, you know, there's a lot of things you don't know, and it creates that humility aspect of that. You know, I think at some point when we feel like we're in a rut in anything, but as an athletic trainer, I felt like, you know, I knew most of what there was to know about athletic training, about, you know, continuing education, and, you know, been around just a little bit. But when you get great assistance, then you realize how much you don't know, by the way. Mm-hmm. So you get a little longer in the tooth in the athletic training realm, you realize what you don't know. But I think the administrative side kind of added that piece of, okay, well, I got to kind of learn this new niche. And it's kind of a challenge. It's a challenge that I'm willing to take on. So that's the positive part of the challenge of moving into a different role, dual role, different things like that. And I have always been the one to say, you know, I know what I don't know. But if I tell you I don't know something, I'm going to try to find out the answer to it and be an assistance that way. But the challenge would be having anything take me away from what I truly decided when I was a junior in high school, from a half day shadow at Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is that I knew what I was made. I knew what I was meant to do as an athletic trainer. And when I have things that kind of take me away from that in kind of an emergent manner, that's just hard on me in terms of, you know, how I have identified myself for however many years it's been. So that's just kind of the summation of the challenges that I've seen.
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't want to say I've been doing more administrative things, but, you know, we've talked about the last couple of weeks, I've been doing a lot more leadership things within my school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been brought into meetings, and we've talked about, you know, policy changes, things like that, that not just are going to affect the athletic training room, but also the athletic department. And it's been awesome to be a part of those things, to be pulled into and to have those questions asked. And, you know, there's times where, okay, this is awesome. I can step away from being an athletic trainer, but like I always know I'm going to get snapped back into it and I'm going to stay the athletic trainer. And, you know, that's gotta be tough when you look at those types of, I don't want to say bad experiences, but you know, those difficult challenges of losing your identity of who you've always been, who you right. always you know, looked at yourself as.
Right. And I would say, John, that it's mostly you're continuing to try to identify, you know, or identify that or establish your identity. And it's evolving for me. I had a wake up call probably. It was 2 years ago. We were at the end of school meetings and I'm walking through our library, and our librarian has been here. She's probably been here 30 years and she's with one of our history teachers. And we're sitting there and we're talking about maybe some interaction I had with a student athlete. And she just mentioned to me, she goes, well, you know, this is the last class that you are just Ross, the athletic trainer, you know, being approachable and different things like that.
Right.
And I was like, I was so upset. I was mad. I was like, you know, what gives you the right to say that?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really reflective and I took it back and I'm like, well, that's kind of, okay, that's a new challenge, right? Where, you know, are you maximizing every student athlete interaction, no matter what role you decide you're in? Meaning if somebody thinks, oh, he's the AD, either says I get my varsity letter or not, or different things like that. Well, what am I doing in terms of maximizing every interaction with that student athlete so that, you know, that is in a, at least not a positive light, because not all my interactions are going to be positive, but mm-hmm. at least that I care, you know what I mean? So I think that was kind of a wake up call for me, and that kind of guides, I feel like that kind of guides me in whatever role that I'm involved in on a daily basis. So.
You kind of talked about the positive interaction. Do you deal with any disciplinary factors or whatever within that? And being an athletic trainer, does that affect your ability to, if you're dealing with a disciplinary issue, does that affect your ability to be an athletic trainer?
I do think that it's a great question, but I don't think it doesn't affect my ability to do the disciplinary side on the athletic administrative side, mainly because I do that. Everything's in coordination with other ADs, assistant principal, you know, we kind of have a standard of how we got to do that. I will say that it likely affects my, that easygoing interaction when I'm in the athletic training mode, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Where, been in thousands of training rooms, you know, that the training room's off in the barbershop, right. You know, I had a coach when I first started here that said, man, it's like the barbershop in there. You hear everything. You guys cover such a huge gamut of information about kids, about other kids, about teachers, about coaches and this and that. And again, that kind of goes back to being on the user end of athletics. You hear a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. but I think that probably affects how those student athletes, you know, interact when I'm in the, when I'm, how they interact directly with me. But when it gets down to the core aspect of, you know, when I'm evaluating an athlete, that doesn't change because, you know, you have your own approach and that's, you're trying to dig into, you know, your job is gathering history and telling them what you're going to do and telling them why we're doing things and different things like that. So it's really kind of the kind of downtime conversational moments. They're probably not as forthcoming mm-hmm. when I'm roaming the training room as they might be when I'm not, or the way it used to be. So that would be the only, that would be the, you know, you might not connect quite as much on a personal level with that role. That's just my theory. So
is that difficult?
Is it typical or difficult? I'm sorry.
No, difficult.
It's difficult for me yeah. because again, I think that, you know, there's a reason why you get into athletic training and stay in it. You know, mm-hmm. one thing to get in it and the reason to stay in it where, you know, I'm enriched by them as much as they're enriched by me. Do you know what I'm saying? So
right.
I think if we cut off any component of that, that's a concern. But I'm going to look at that like, okay, well, I'm going to work harder at being able to delineate between them, between my administrative hat and when I'm you know, working as an athletic trainer in our sports medicine area. So.
Good. You know, we've touched on these things, you know, some of your experiences. Are there experiences that you've had that have shaped your style of leadership, both in athletic training and the administrative end?
Yeah, I think it starts with, it really starts with my parents. My parents were were business owners in South Dakota. My dad is still 75 years old, is still a practicing veterinarian for Cooper Animal Clinic in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And my stepdad and my mom in Beersford, South Dakota, ran my stepdad's pharmacist. My mom ran her own aspect of that. She was a Hallmark card store owner. And so I learned a lot from them as just being, you know, leaders within their own communities, pillars, advocates for civic leadership and customer service, you know. If they're not having great interactions with people, they're not going to be able to provide for their family, you know? And I think I grew up in both of those environments, where I was a part of that. They were both family businesses. And I would say I just learned from mentors in both my mom and my two fathers. But then, you know, from Gull Lake High School to Hudson High School, to Churchill High School, to Ferndale High School, to here, being exposed to a number of different leaders, whether it's athletic directors, principals, different things like that. I feel like I've just tried to glean from all of them because nothing's proprietary, and I kind of have tried to develop relationships with them. So I, A, kind of know what worked and what didn't for them, or I can call them and say, you know, what works for you in this situation and what works for you in this situation. So, I think that, you know, those are two foundational things. But then really, John and Jeremy, it's been trial and error. I mean, it's been trial and error. What's worked, what hasn't worked, and saying, well, that didn't go so well. I think maybe I'll take this approach and upon reflection, you know. So that's been an interesting part of the journey too, you know. Been a big aid in humility in that regard, so.
That leads me to the next question. What's, is there a trait that you've found that works best for you and the people that are around you?
I think my trait, I would say, you know, the traits that I would probably identify myself as my strategy is listen first, be approachable. And I think I succeed at that, but then at the point where, being able to turn that into, change and also being a person that leads by doing, meaning that I think that's the background of athletic training, is that we are stewards in a lot of different areas, you know, helping our maintenance staff pick up chairs after a basketball game, or you know, pick up a piece of trash, you know, outside somewhere on one of the fields and different things like that. I think that that's always a critical point of, no matter if you're mentoring kids, but, you know, being an active part of every aspect, not because of a certain title or history or how long you've been there or different things like that. So, but I think most of the people that work with me is I'm always going to listen. I may not always agree, but the viewpoint is valuable in terms of being able to shape exactly what approach you need to take to leading. So that's kind of my own opinion.
What kind of changes have you made over the last 5 years? Probably, I think I want to ask more about policies at the high school and how have they, have they benefited athletic training, or have you used your athletic training background to help better a policy at the high school? I mean, that's a better question to ask.
Yeah, no, I that's a great question. I think it's, you know, I can kind of think of exactly, you know, the first step that we put in right when we got here, when I came into the athletic office, we used to have a black book that was about this big, this big, this big, just huge. And it had everything written in, games, practices, different things like that. So it was a big black binder. It's just like, came in mid-July and basically tossed it in the garbage and just put everything on the Google document system, Google Docs, practice schedules, game schedules, all kinds of different things to just make it easier for everybody to access and take, keep my phone from not ringing as much to say, okay, well, where am I practicing this day and this day? And, you know, we rotate people around, practices and all that stuff, all those things around. And so that's kind of an easy technological fix. But I will say it's helpful for an athletic trainer to be in an administrative role. And I'll give it just an example. And knowing that our listenership or viewership is athletic trainers, to be able to say to three coaches that want to practice on a Saturday or on Labor Day Monday because they have games on Tuesday, say, okay, I want you, you need to centralize what you do between this hour and this hour, because I'm not having myself or one of my athletic trainers come in and work a practice at 10 a.m., 3 p.m., and 5 p.m. You know, so I think that for me as kind of the administrative role, the whole goal is obviously serve all my constituents, serve all of you know, student athletes, parents, different things like that. But, you know, I would say locally within the walls, I've helped our athletic training staff have better quality of life because I have a lot of control over some things that would be maybe kind of background information for an athletic administrator and say, well, you can practice whenever you want, whatever's convenient for you. No, well, if you want athletic training coverage, this is what you want to do. I guess the only thing is that another thing we've really tried to hone in our academic accommodation process, academic accommodations post-concussion, where I've played a pretty active role in clarifying with faculty, you know, what's to be expected after concussion, what we'll typically do in the athletic training room to track these, and how we're going to update you to make sure that we're making the necessary academic accommodations to encourage healing from that injury. And so those would be probably the two main, you know, the scheduling aspect and sort of quality of experience for all of our support staff, and also, you know, really clarifying that we're working on the academic end to make sure that these concussions are handled correctly in the classroom too.
Being an administrator, do you think that has helped you more with the support of concussion, post-concussion stuff and the academic accommodations?
Yeah, I just think it gives you more, I just think it's been, it's probably streamlined who I need to talk to and how do I need to address things. Meaning, you know, for a number of issues, good or bad, you have the principals, the principal or headmaster's ear on a lot of different other things. And it's easy to kind of roll some of those things in and have the environment or the venue to lay out why I want to do these things and then employ them pretty quickly and pretty swiftly into the processes. So.
That's good. I know a lot of people are probably out there right now just overjoyed to hear that you've been more of an advocate for the schedule changing. I know that's a big gripe for, if there's an athletic trainer that doesn't have a problem with a schedule, I would love to have that person on. Like, I don't even know if that person exists. Like, we all have gripes about scheduling, but, you know.
And my two successful athletic trainers aren't different. They still have gripes, but they don't have to come to. They come right to me, and so they have my ear on that. So there's feedback given immediately here. But, yeah, and I think that, you know, does that have, you know, does that have a greater effect on the field as a whole? I'm still trying to identify what mode I would have to speak to athletic administrators about that, you know, and I think that's the continued evolution of NIAAA, which is, you know, National Athletic Directors Association, is that conversation to be had. You know, John, you talked about me being a mentor to you in some cases. You know, I think that's one I'd call on you as a mentor to me in terms of trying to be more active within an organization, being able to speak. And I think that's something that I'm continuing to work towards on the administrative end. So
good. I know we have some questions from the audience. Jeremy, do you want to ask some of those questions?
Israel Pena on Facebook wanted to ask you to talk about some of the barriers that you've overcome. I think you've kind of, you talked about that some, and I know your situation is different. And he actually asked about, is there a certification, like the THSADA, which would be the Texas High School Athletic Directors Association recommended, or whatever it is, I don't know, certification, for ATs wanting to assume those leadership positions. And so just speaking in your experience, in your situation, was there certain classes you had to take, certain certifications, certain memberships you had to join? What are some of the barriers you had to overcome?
Well, you know, in terms of the certification, there are a number of CAA and CMAA, Certified Athletic Administrator and CMAA certifications that are available to us through the NIAAA. Myself, no, I haven't. I have not undertaken those. Merely, I think it's a time factor to be able to kind of plug that into what I'm tasked with here, along with having some sort of a personal life. It's just that's a barrier. But again, I think I'm at my basic level probably as an athletic administrator in terms of where, you know, how my job operates is a lot more operational than it is developmental. And that's kind of a gripe that we have in terms of the framework of our job and try to be able to, you know, not only just schedule games and refs and, you know, kind of work that angle, but to be able to create forums. And again, I'm not a coach in an athletic director position. I'm not a coach. I'll say that. But, I've worked with so many variations of coaches, and I am I'm saying that as at the outside level, I identified myself as not a coach, but I am a coach of student athletes as to their health. I'm a coach to a family as to how to manage their kids' health, you know? So, I think that barrier exists, that I don't have a coaching background, but, I also know that, that everything that we do on the administrative side is relationships, and it's relationships based, and those certifications, you know, can come later. And we can rely on some of that stuff, but in our state, it's not stringent to the point where it's a required nature. Should it be? Possibly. And that might be helpful. And that might be a situation that can kind of guide me on my administrative journey. But at this point, it hasn't been a situation that I'm able to pursue at this point. So
here at my school, Pasadena High School and Pasadena ISD, we have a campus coordinator who is at all the high schools, also the head football coach. And so I think part of that is the salary, the role, which, you know, is questionable, but, you know, they tie those two positions together, which kind of stinks for anybody else that would like to do administration. But then we also have a district athletic director. And, you know, I had talked to our athletic director before, Rodney Chant, about what if I wanted to take your job, what would it require? And he's like, you're probably going to have some coaching experience to be selected as an athletic director. Neither him or our current athletic director have had head coaching or head varsity football coach experience. And so it's one of those things, you know, you probably have to have some sort of coaching experience, but maybe that's just in that one situation. Cause maybe if you go to the right school, if you go just outside of where I am, there's several large high schools who have an athletic trainer who serves as an associate athletic director. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's one role where you serve there for a while and then you go into the next option. So like Charlie Stevens or Richard Gregoire, both of those guys, they were athletic trainers and then they moved to the administrative role. And now they're serving as like the director of sports medicine for the district type thing. Right. And so I know you mentioned that yours was kind of like, here's this job, whoever wants it, kind of that's how you were talking about it, and you and the other guy decided to split it. But just getting through the good old boy type system to where it's like, oh yeah, well, because I know you, you're going to get that. What kind of tips or words of encouragement do you have for somebody that wants to do that?
Yeah, I think it's it kind of stems back to there were concerns. There were concerns when we were kind of looking at that and when we were vetting the situation that we proposed in terms of a split system, is that I'm not a coach. I think that, being an advocate as to, and not even an advocate, an educator as to what an athletic trainer really does, I think that speaks to, some of our own profession's identity issues in terms of, the administration that goes on in the job of athletic trainer is probably undervalued. And, you have to, I had to sell that to, the head baseball coach who was also kind of up for, I had to sell that versus another individual that was up for this potential position. And it's kind of an odd framework as to how things, took place here. For tips, I guess, you gotta value and sell the component of what you do to multitask, to serve all programs, to mentor kids in a non-athletic, in a non-game or non-coaching situation. Mm-hmm. Many of those quiet moments in the training room, in terms of garnering motivation, talking a kid through their darkest places after a season-ending injury. I think those components, the non-seen components of our job, I'd say, are huge into identifying your own value and knowing that someone who's chosen who's chosen this profession and are able to do it for a long time and well, there's a reason, because you're a trusted ally, you're a trusted person, and you're an encourager, through some of the darkest moments. And if an athletic department, doesn't look at that as something that's very intriguing to have in an administrative role, then that might not be a spot for me. You know what I mean? But, I know that's easy to say from where I'm sitting, but I do think that when I kind of made the transition, it was because of the relationships and the equity that you build up as what you do as an athletic trainer.
When we talked with Brandy Curry, she mentioned she has a journal where she writes down in the morning her goals, and then at night she reflects on them. And so that's one of the things that I think would be good, is just taking down notes of how you've impacted people. But also, one of the things you said, the value of the non-sport bias, because you, as an athletic trainer, understand all of the sports. You participate in all the sports. You want all of the sports to do well. You don't have a singular focus of working only with football, because it's pretty obvious that the head football coach, his number one priority is football. If anything else is going on, then he's going to pass it off to somebody else or put it off till after November or whatever. And so I think as an athletic trainer, you have that opportunity to say, I have experience with all of them. I know what it means to consistently work hard and work with multiple people throughout the entire course of the year, not to slack off because I don't have time. I can't slack off. I haven't been trained that way that now my season is done, because as I was telling John, we had basketball practice start yesterday. Football still got 3 more weeks, right? We don't have time to slack off. I think, we have a Thursday game. I get to go home early Friday. Well, then there's basketball practice, right?
Yeah.
We know all of the sports. We work with all of the sports. So I think that's definitely another thing that you mentioned, but I'm not sure if, it was clarified in that way. And so I just want to remember, encourage anybody that is looking at that. And then you talked about the relationships again. And that's all it is there too. Just the meeting people, interacting with people. At first, I didn't really have a good relationship with our athletic director, but then I said, I'm going to just go talk to him. So I just, at the games, I would always stop and say hi, ask about his family, the vacations. They used to they would go camping. So I went camp, I went camping because of them, but I went camping. So we had something in common. We talked about some of the trips or places that they went to, and those kind of things. And they go to a church and we talk about their activity involvement in church and those kind of things. And so I decided to be intentional to build that relationship, even though people still to this day will say that guy is not easy to talk to. He's not a people person. You're right. He's not.
Yeah.
But I made that effort. I had that relationship with him. If I needed something, I could call him. If I had a question, I could call him. No big deal. Right. Because I made that effort to make that relationship. And again, sometimes I'll go up to the press box and, you know, talk with the school board members or go to the school board meetings and just kind of show my face. That's not very often, but sometimes I do that, or we present something or give them something on School Board Appreciation Month. So all of those things go a long way for creating opportunity, or whenever your name comes up for that job, that you're recognized. You're like, oh yeah, Jeremy, he does so much in the community. He does, you know, the mass CPR training. He takes kids to the rodeo, takes kids to the college field trips. He has kids graduating. He's doing this. I think he's really involved with all of the sports and taking care of all the health. So let's give him a shot. Maybe it's an assistant role. Okay, fine. I'll take it. I'll take the assistant role and then move up from there.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, the equity component of, you know, as an athletic trainer, as a background is, and, you know, I had 8 years to kind of get ingrained into the fiber of the school and know a lot of relationships before even this opportunity presented. But as an athletic trainer, you know, the feedback you get is, okay, let's say I'm focused on football. And if I don't bring the same energy to our middle school or JV field hockey game, you know, sometimes the parents wouldn't notice it, but the kids would. Oh, all he cares about is football. And so that's, and granted, football takes up a lot of our time based on the nature of it. But if you don't bring that energy to every student athlete that you're coming into contact with as an athletic trainer, you're not doing your job. And the same thing goes for now transitioning this role. I'm the guy that's like, okay, this is week 9 of football. If week 9 of football, we've qualified for playoffs, we've got enough points to potentially host next week. Well, if our field hockey team wins tonight and they win Tuesday at Ann Arbor Pioneer, they're going to be in the state finals on Saturday. And that's going to be, and I'm the guy that's the loudest in this office, which, you know, it makes for an interesting conversation to say, okay, well, you should probably do a Friday night football game so that our student body can get to that state final state field hockey game, you know, because of my background of the equity component and no skin in the game, you know, as an athletic trainer, oftentimes athletic directors are coach/ADs. As athletic trainer, you're ingrained to be Switzerland, you know, to be neutral party, unbiased approach. And, you know, so I think that is, like you said, Jeremy, I think that's a key trait to kind of have in the toolbox, the tool bag anyway. So.
Yeah, it's so important to constantly bring energy and to have energy, and not just, you don't have to be the person who's always screaming and yelling, but to show it and to constantly do it. We had a meeting yesterday, and we had concerns about, you know, coaches, you know, in season were, you know, maybe having too much to do. And I said, hold on, I am always in season. Like from middle of July until June, I am in season, and that doesn't stop me or persuade me from doing anything extra. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once I said that, I those words just kind of came out of my mouth, and I was like, holy crap, I really am in season, and I have to constantly bring it. And the students, like you said, they know when you're not, you know, bringing it as much as you should be or can be. They may not always call you out on it, but, you know, they know. And in our position, like you said, we always have to be in that role of constantly having energy and bringing energy because, you know, we're there as advocates for our students.
And I think sometimes that, you know, at times that in my time as an athletic trainer, you know, I've underestimated the effectiveness of my energy to my end of the operation, meaning, like that little component of, you know, stretching a girl out before a volleyball game, and hey, you know, big game tonight, let's go. let's do that. You know, let's get after it. And if that's not, you know, that little thing might just go, okay, well, I feel pretty good about, and it wasn't anything about technical. It wasn't anything about, you know, the treatment I provided, you know, just being someone that recognizes that sometimes kids, that part of their brain hasn't quite developed in some cases yet. Mm-hmm. And that they just need to hear that little tiny piece of positivity that gets them going. And to say that, to, you know, to minimize that aspect of what we do with our kids, is a disservice to our profession. So I think it's, you know, bring energy even when you don't have it, you know, make it to make it a little bit, you know? So, but it, you know, I think that's always been my favorite part of being in the athletic training realm. So.
Nice. You know, somebody who wants to pursue being an athletic director.
Don't do it. I'm kidding.
That's a joke. Right, long answer. any suggestions you have for them, or any bits of advice? You're still shaking your head no.
I'm not shaking my head, because don't do it. I think that I'll just tell you, I was very fortunate coming into the situation that I came into, and I fully recognize it. Not because of our facilities, and because of the, you know, the resources that we have. When I took over for my predecessor, she had already gone, she had spent, you know, probably 5 or 6 years just establishing what an athletic trainer does. And so when I came here versus some of the other places I went, I had to, there was so much of an educational component of what we do, why we do it, what we're held to. And I think that's key. There's a lot of things that guide us to say what we're held to as athletic trainers. That's an easy conversation to have with people, and why, you know, what guides us. She had done such an awesome job of educating the community as to what an athletic trainer does, and what the policies and procedures were for having an athletic trainer in secondary school. And so when I got here, it was just like, okay, well, that list has been checked off. Now I just, you know, I continue to talk about value. And John, we talked about this offside of tracking, you know, tracking treatments and attaching CPT codes to it, and a matter of just internal, not as a presentation, but to talk to administration about, you know, the value of our services to our student body and different things like that. And then, you know, and then just talk about, you know, what we do behind the scenes and how we help some of these families out in different ways. And so I don't have a ton of advice, because there's a lot of points where I feel like I know how I got to this point, but I don't necessarily, I'm not sure. But I think that, and I know it's in generalities, but managing and maintaining and establishing relationships, even when you don't think they're going to pan, you know, there's no goal to it. It's just a matter of just being able to come to the fiber of coming to the fiber of wherever you're at. But, you know, I do wish at, you know, that my master's degree wasn't just another kind of an extension of athletic training. I get to the point, even now being 43 years old, thinking, man, I would just wish that might have been either a psychology or an athletic administration, you know, so that would have guided my career a little bit better. But, it's about just maintaining relationships and selling what you do.
It's, you know, we constantly keep coming back to that word, relationships. I want to ask you, just, you know, before we jump off, what is your definition of a leader?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think it, you know, I can, it's hard for me to identify, and, you know, couple of questions of, you know, what do you identify as success, and what is a leader? I guess my definition for a leader is an advocate. And So I would say that, you know, for me and my job, I'm an advocate for my school and its mission, you know, as an administrator advocate, that's the core of it, the school and its mission. I'm an advocate for a student athlete, in terms of, a student athlete with a coach, you know, if it's something I have to address with a coach administratively, I'm an advocate for athletic training, meaning in my administrative role, I am an athletic trainer first. And is my day geared around that? A lot of times administratively, 70% is administrative and 30% is athletic training. But I'm an athletic trainer first, and that's kind of, that's at my core. And then I'm an advocate for myself to say, an advocate for myself to know my limitations and know when I don't know something. And dang it, I'm glad you asked me that, because I'm going to try to find out the answer for you. And thus, I'm an advocate for my community in terms of saying, okay, I'm going to get you answers. Might not be the answer you want to hear. Don't get me wrong. But this is why we come to this answer. An advocate for my family and others, and an advocate for everybody within our department to say, you know, do I know, you know, how the schedule change is going to affect our equipment manager or our scorekeeper, you know, moving into a late rainy night for a game. And do I know how that's going to affect? Well, I'm going to be an advocate for them and saying, okay, well, maybe I'm going to feed them. Maybe I'm going to get a meal so that they can eat and try to be dialed into every part of our department. So advocacy is, you know, can be taken a lot of different ways in a lot of different realms, but this might not be right. You might not write in a lot of books, but I feel like an advocate's kind of, I feel like I'm kind of a middle person, you know, a facilitator, being an advocate for a bunch of different areas of what I do and parts of my life. So that's how I would define it, guys.
What one word describes you as a leader?
I'd stick with that, John. I would stick with that. I'm a listen first person. I think that's ingrained in my background, whether it's personal background or the athletic training background. You listen first. You're listening first to find clues about what's going to guide you as to what special tests I'm going to do and you know, how I can get from a history. Pretty much 80% of what I'm thinking is going on. I've already gotten it from just the conversation of what I had with this student athlete. And so it's ingrained. But I think it's advocacy for me. Again, like I said, that's not selling a lot of books, but that's how I operate. And that's probably, you know, you could probably pull the people that I work directly with every day and they would agree with you. So.
Yeah, I think it's very important that, you know, you're always an advocate. I think the really good athletic trainers that are out there are constantly an advocate for their students, their coaches, their parents. Even when they are conflicting, you're always going to be an advocate for both sides. You know, there's so many times where we get pulled in to between the coach and a player, but you know, we have to be an advocate for both of those people. And it's so very important to, you know, like we said, relationships, constantly work on relationships and, you know, we may not always be able to choose our student athletes and, well, you do probably sometimes.
Yeah. I'm only working with this person. Yeah. This person.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we may not be able to choose who we work with and who we work for or who works around us, but we can definitely always choose the relationships that we have with those people. And being an advocate for everybody is a great trait, I think, for a leader to have and constantly want to work for and work with people.
Well, and I think that, you know, I think that it's kind of an all encompassing term for me in that whenever we're in conflict resolution, you are an advocate. Okay, I'm going to take your opinion. I'm going to take your viewpoint. I'm going to listen to you. Okay, I'm going to listen to you, whether I agree with it or not. I'm going to listen to you, but I'm going to take your viewpoint into the equation. And then I'm going to go back to what I mentioned as being an advocate for the school and its mission. Well, here's why I think that rationale is flawed. And then I'm going to be an advocate for somewhere meeting in the middle and saying, this is a condition to lead this. This is a condition that we're held to. And this is how we're going to move forward. And, you know, and again, like I said, I've had enough terrible meetings. I've had enough, I've had enough subpar interactions to guide me to that point, that, you know, the more I work in my jobs, the less I feel like I know, you know, but at the same time, if you're always honoring a viewpoint and trying to work towards a solution, you can't go wrong, you know, whether, you know, in any realm, whether it's athletic administration, athletic training, or something different, you know?
Right. So Jeremy, do you have any more questions? I don't want to keep Ross too long.
The last comment I think I have is, both of you, John, you said you've been attending more meetings, and Ross, you were just talking about going to meetings. I think honestly, that might be the hardest thing for me. Like if I was to be more of an advocate, like Ross said, that I hate sitting in meetings, but if I want to be in effect and improve that next level, I have to be willing to put that aside and go to those meetings, right? So I have to be able to say, okay, it's uncomfortable for me, but I want to improve. I want to make this better. What does it take? So again,
Jeremy, I think, you know, sorry to jump in, but you know, I, when John, you asked me what tips I had, and I shook my head because I really don't have a lot of great tips, but I will say that I'm professionally pesky, be pesky, meaning, you know, we did a training room build out and there was an area that is now my hydro area that kind of sits around the corner from our office. And that was supposed to be slated for storage. And I just bugged our director of operations, our director of security. I said, when's that meeting? When is that meeting? When can I get in there and be respectful, obviously, you know, but be kind of pesky, keep asking the questions in a professional way. And at some point you're going to move that forward, you know? And I think I think that would be my only tip. I can be professionally pesky and try to get to the point where I may not get everything I want, but hopefully we can get something that's trending in the right direction, you know? So
I like to end these, this series every day with a closing gratitude. I think I've said this before, a good mark of a leader is somebody who has gratitude, and somebody who is able to share thanks is a good leader. And you've touched on it a lot today, is having humility and being humble. Is there somebody that you would like to thank? Ooh. Or someone or something?
You know what? I guess, I have big thanks to the people that, you know, kind of guide me and not even professionally, but our executive AD. I talked to you guys about his dual role and head football coach, but just the component of balancing out the craziness of a private independent school with constituents of a community, sometimes it can get pretty crazy. He has guided me a lot in terms of being able to take a step back, realizing what your role is, realizing that there's only certain things that you can control and there's certain things you can't control. And I think from that aspect, he's counseled me down from the ledge in some cases, in a lot of different scenarios. But, you know, my assistants or even assistants throughout the years that have kind of guided me through this transition, I would not be able to even think about getting into the administrative side of my job without having awesome people to call as coworkers and people that we've brought on over the years that we've had great. Right now, Andrew Hughes, Katie O'Connell, who are in my training room, Dana Alaness, who's kind of an alum, Country Day alum. But those people, in how solid they are as people and athletic trainers and flexible, allow me to be flexible to kind of go back and forth. So, from kind of both sides of the spectrum, I've got awesome people that are clearly patient. They have to be, and not only patient, but excellent professionals that, you know, our student athletes benefit from on a daily basis from their care. So those would be my thank yous for sure.
Good. I wanted to thank Dana myself, who is now my assistant, and she has been absolutely wonderful to work with. And you know, I thank you for your guidance in helping her. And she's an absolutely wonderful independent athletic trainer, and she has been an amazing complement to who I am as an athletic trainer, and has allowed me to do things like this, to do the podcast, to step away and cover a different thing, and she'll stay back. And it's been absolutely wonderful having her on board at my high school. And so I wanted to say thank you to Dana. And as you had said, she had previously worked at Country Day. So it was nice to have something that we had in common that we're both able to work with.
Yeah, it's been a great, you know, John, you know, it's been great to have us kind of branch out in a lot of different areas. But, you know, we've got a nice little family in the Oakland County area, where we have a lot of people that have kind of gone back and forth between our two institutions. And it's really a pleasure for you guys to ask me to do something like this. And you guys, you guys are moving forward the profession of athletic training. And I, you know, if there's any other point where I can be of assistance with that, I'd love to be on board. But kudos to both of you guys and everybody listening that are really trying to do the same goals that we have, you know, every day, is educate people about what we do and really be leaders within the community in our positions. So.
All right. So I guess that means I am up. Mm-hmm. I want to thank, those people who are listening live, the one specifically I saw in the comments, Dennis Monk, Lizzie Orenberger, Kelly Stutes. I know there's other people, obviously Israel Pena, for throwing in the comments, and giving us some extra questions to ask. And so I know he also messaged me saying, you know, thanks for asking my question. So he was listening, paying attention. And so Ross, you are making a difference, right? Because people are listening. People want to know, and you're giving them the answers. You're giving them, this is me, this is my story. So I really appreciate you being willing to jump on. John, again, thanks for thinking of the idea, incorporating Ross, and all the hard work you're doing. But my personal gratitude is, I was, you know, I'm kind of where I'm like adding sponsors type thing. And so I contacted Hoist, which is a hydration product, kind of like Gatorade. And like from the very first contact, their person, Rachel Trotta, she was like all on board, like, yeah, I'm super excited. I'd love to, you know, be a part of what you're doing. You know, any way we can help, whatever we can do. And so it's just been really good to have somebody who's enthusiastic and who I'm not having to like beg to support and to help and to promote what we're doing here on the podcast. And so again, Rachel, thanks for being fully on board, for wanting, for desiring to help and improve what we're doing as athletic trainers and here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipcooper. So again, for Ross Cooper, so it's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipcooper. And so, John, you want me to close it out, or you got anything else?
I do have a quote. I didn't get a chance to put it in the closing notes, but I'm glad I wrote it down as we start talking. You know, Ross being new to that profession of athletic administrator, it kept reminding me of a quote from one of my favorite movies, Zoolander. And it's from Hansel. And he said, "Do I know what I'm doing today? No, but I'm here and I'm going to give it my best shot." And that is one of the things that kind of kept resonating with me. You know, I think it's a great way to end our show today. And, you know, if we just go out there, give it our best shot, have enthusiasm, have energy, doesn't matter what role we get put into, as long as we are humble and continue to work on relationships, we'll be successful as leaders.
I think this podcast definitely went about 3 minutes too long there, allowing you to add that quote in from Zealand. All right. So for Jeremy, John, Ross, and the Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap. Thanks.
There we go. All right, man.